Well, hi there, everybody.
Hi-de-ho, friends and neighbors.
My name's Rob Birdwell.
My name's Bob Madar.
And this is The Petri Dish. Well, Bob, here we are again with another new episode. And we were kicking around this idea of talking about sound.
Sound, absolutely. Sound. And, you know, it's the interesting thing is that the sound waves that are hitting your ears so that you can understand what we're saying is kind of an interesting, complex, and rather fascinating little area of physics, but then has an absolutely direct impact on the arts in terms of music. So a little bit of wave function.
Wave function. So Bob and I are both musicians. Bob has a scientific teaching background. I have hardly any science background, but I'm a musician, and so together we do this podcast, and we broadcast out to the world. So we thought, let's talk about sound this episode, and looking forward to it. We got a lot of kind of interesting stories.
That's right. I hope you have your notebooks open and are ready to focus and take notes, because there will be a short quiz at the end.
Excellent. And
not really.
no quiz.
Just kidding.
But we're gonna have some music perform for you as usual. Bob and I put this music together ourselves, and so we want your hearts open too. And so
hearts and minds, baby.
hearts and minds here in the Petri dish, where arts and minds are cultured.
Something.
We'll have to talk to the marketing department to figure what is our tagline.
What's the media? What's the culture?
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for listening, and let's take it away, Bob, with another episode of
The Petri Dish.
Yeah. So I've got some questions for you.
All right, fire away.
You know, I'm ashamed to say I've been a musician for a long time.
Well, and your music's beautiful.
Well, so I've used recording technology, and yet I've been kind of ignorant about some of the things. Now, I think like most people, I'm familiar with the term hertz.
Mm-hmm.
I know what a sound wave is. Mm-hmm. Definitely what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to edit it in ways to mm-hmm. suit my needs.
Mm-hmm.
I can even use plugins to remove sound and do magical, mystical morphing things.
Right, right. Yeah,
And I've done other experiments, but I have to admit, if I go to, you know, if I want to dig up some information, I've got to look it up. And oftentimes when I'm reading this stuff, mm-hmm. it'll talk about formulas. I've read about Newton's formula.
Yeah.
And then this genius Newton wasn't even quite right. And then his formula was tweaked a little bit. And it seemed like a kind of interesting.
That's kind of the way science works. Yeah.
Beautiful kind of collaboration. I don't know if it was they weren't collaborating directly, but over time through science. Anyway, I read about these crazy formulas. The square root of this times this divided by this equals the next, you know, Katy Perry hit.
Yeah, that's right.
whatever. So anyway,
Chuck Berry, an equation, right?
But so it makes you realize it's a humbling thing to see these things in formulae, and yet they're things we can take for granted too. Beautiful sounds,
very much, and you know, it's interesting, because the the one thing about formulas, I think, that is interesting to me is that they're sort of a symbolic language, and they describe relationships and sort of the nature of phenomenon symbolically, that, and they kind of get at sort of the base, the real fundamentals, the similarities. So you can apply that formula to any kind of a waveform and it all kinds of works. So for example, when we talk about Hertz, what Hertz really refers to is the frequency of the wave as it passes by. So as we're sitting, if we were able to sit and watch a sound wave go by us, we'd see, you know, areas of it's an oscillating function. So you would see areas of compaction where there was, you know, sort of the waveform went through and pushed the air molecules together, and then right behind it would be these areas of rarefaction, which is sort of areas of low pressure. You almost think of it as a pressure wave going through. So you've got high pressure followed by low pressure followed by high pressure. Well, it's the distance between those two high pressure fronts as they flow through. That's the wavelength. So if we're sitting there and we could actually visualize a sound wave going by, if I was talking like this and it was a low frequency wave, fewer waveforms would go by our vantage point in a given period of time, like in a second. If it was a high frequency
wave, going into your falsetto
like this, and I was talking like this, then there would be more. I know that's hello, baby. Those
watch it, Barry Gibb. That's, yeah. Bob is on to you.
Yeah, and I'm 66. Anyway, so those a high frequency sound would have more of those waveforms going by us. So there'd be more of the areas of compaction and the areas of rarefaction would go past us in a given period of time. So what a hertz is one waveform per second.
Excellent. So, okay, so as musicians, you know, when we're tuning up, if we're in an orchestra, we're probably going to tune to an A.
Mm-hmm.
And most musicians know that as A440.
Right.
Or sometimes A438, depending on what country you're in. But generally, you know, A440. So 440, if I've got this A, and we're tuning up. That is, so that 440, when you talked frequency, there's 440 vibrations per second. So that means each start, the start and the tip and back down, that's one.
Yeah, between two adjacent points, same point on two. In other words, you calculate a wavelength is basically between two of identical points on adjacent waveforms. So it could be the crest, it could be the trough, it could be any place in that function, that periodic oscillation or periodic, you know, that vibration. But that's a waveform, that's a wavelength. So if we hear 440 hertz, we're thinking, well, that means 440 of those waveforms went past us in 1 second.
You know, one of the reasons I think, and this is just kind of a funny aside, maybe why I did not, you know, some people are triggered by certain things. Like you could say, know, Miles Davis, and somebody could get excited about that.
Where I just did.
So yeah. So somebody might go, you know. But at one time, you know, when I was a kid, somebody came up to me and said something like, "You want a Hertz donut?"
A Hertz donut?
A Hertz donut. And so in my mind, I think I was old enough to realize, is he saying something technical? But then he said a word that was sweet and tasty. Hertz donut.
Donut.
That sounds strange. And then he proceeded to whack me in the arm. And then I'm like, and then he said, "Hertz donut." Yeah. So, yeah. So that's where
that middle school, man. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
This may have been college for all I know. But either way, it may have just turned me off of science momentarily.
That's like, I'll never look at Hertz again.
Oh, that hurts. I'm going to stick to music. So no, you did a great job describing about a Hertz. So it's interesting. So the medium now, mm-hmm. as musicians, mm-hmm. what is our medium when we're performing in front of people?
The air, yeah, the atmosphere,
air.
The air, yeah, that's
and we know
that's
that
medium. Yeah.
We're pushing air. We buy these big PAs and amps, and it's all to drive.
Yeah.
The sound through the air.
That's exactly it.
To reach the listener.
That's exactly it. So, you know, in these speakers, basically what those speakers are doing is that they're powered up. They take power to run a speaker. And the reason it does is there's a big diaphragm in there, and there may be more than one, and they're popping back and forth. They go back and forth. And as they go back and forth, they start to create a waveform. Mm-hmm. So as you can think of, the membrane goes forward, it compresses the air, it goes bang and pops it. Mm-hmm. When it goes back, it actually pulls a slight vacuum, and you get sort of a reduction in you get an area of low pressure. So you have it goes forward, high pressure, goes back, low pressure, goes forward, high pressure, goes back, low pressure. And how fast it does that can be measured in hertz. So the thing can be popping back and forth at 440. If it's popping back and forth at 440, you hear A.
Yeah,
because the waveform that's coming out of that speaker now is going wah 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 wah, hits your ear, and we could get into the human ear, and it's an amazing thing, but we don't have to get too far into it at this juncture. But what happens is when it gets to the ear, it goes wah 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 wah, and it hits the ear, and it hits the eardrum, and it goes and it does the same thing, and this thing's rattling through some little bones in there, blah 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 blah. But the main thing that happens is it transduces that signal, which is this back and forth motion, transduces it into a signal that goes into your brain, and you go, "Oh, that's A."
That's A.
Yeah, yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it just is so, yeah. There's all these transitions and different waveforms, but it all conveys a certain amount of information. And the information is, okay, I'm in tune, or oh crap, I got to pull my slide out.
Yeah, well, and so I mean, what you just described, there's a big difference between, you know, hearing a concert A through a speaker, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming that can kind of be heard, and hearing, you know, a G flat 7 major chord, right?
Oh yeah.
So now you're hearing multiple things. So there's a lot of complexity. Even our voices have tonality to them.
They do.
You know, at this pitch, at this resonance, and we're always told to change our voices so we don't sound boring all the time. It can be overdone, but that's
really true. And the interesting thing is that these frequencies, when you'll get three or four or five or six or, you know, a whole bunch of these different frequencies, different waveforms with different frequencies, and they'll come together, and then they produce an emotional sound, something that triggers emotion in us. So when you play like that, the flat five, I think, was in that chord, and that gives us an edge where we go, "Oh, yeah, that's just got an edge to it." Well, it's the way the frequencies relate to each other that conveys that emotional edge that we think is like, "Oh, that's like, ooh, I gotta."
Well, there is some subjectivism here, right? Because my trusty dog, who's laying on the couch, mm-hmm. was pretty much nonplussed by that.
I didn't really. You're right. In fact, I don't think your dog's changed a whole lot.
No,
since we got started.
Not enamored with anything. But if I said something that she was interested, like, "Hey Bella, where's the squirrel?"
Oh, that okay. She packs right up.
Yeah. So yeah. She heard the squirrel.
Right.
And she's going to the door now. But
that's right.
I sent sound waves her way, and she's looking out
the
window.
She's looking out the window. I know. There's a squirrel out there. I know there is
a squirrel out there. And so sound. It's powerful. Subjective musically. Again, this beautiful G-flat major 7th chord means nothing to her. But to her, it's the underscore for where's the squirrel at?
I need some squirrel. I'm really excited.
Okay, well, we're a little distracted here, but
that's a really good demonstration and really interesting that the waveforms have a certain physical characteristic to them. What they do to you, is
it depends on so many different things,
different variables. And one person may listen to an interval and go, "That's gorgeous." And other people may listen to an interval and go, "That's really, really, really dissonant. I don't like that at all."
Oh, yeah. You know. You put a C and you put a B next to it and it's dissonant. But you fashion that in the context of a major 7th chord.
Yeah.
And it at least to most of our ears, and it depends on the lyric, I suppose, that's going with it, but
it conveys emotion.
It conveys some emotion there.
Yeah.
So we're getting into the subjective territory of what's appealing and whatever, but back to just the physics of sound, because there's you mentioned a lot of things, and we're going to talk in part two of our, we're going to get a little more artsy stuff. But in terms of this idea of sound and the physics of sound, and we're moving energy.
Yep.
And I guess definitely ties into the art side of it too. But I mean, technically, when we hear anything, we're connecting into an energy, whether we know it or not.
Oh yeah,
that's a powerful thing.
Waves are energy. I mean, basically, waves move energy. That's what they do. They move energy through media. Some waves, like sound waves, have to have a medium to transmit through. So it's water, air, solids, those kinds of things. That'll move sound waves. Other waves, like light waves, those are quite a different wave in some ways. They have very similar characteristics, but they can move through a vacuum. They can move through anywhere.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah. So anyone reading about sound, and obviously, folks, we're not, I'm especially not equipped to go deep into this, but if you're doing any sort of cursory research, you're going to come across two terms, longitudinal and transverse waves.
Right.
So, Bob, you have a good understanding of what these mean.
It's kind of, if you sort of do a thought experiment or imagine yourself sitting in a chair and you're watching a waveform go by, if it's a sound wave and it's a longitudinal wave, what that means is that the wave vibrates parallel to the direction that it's moving. So you can kind of think about it like a slinky. If you lay a slinky out on the floor and you pull it back and let go, you'll see this wave go through it. And it's oscillating back and forth, and it's also moving in the same direction that it's oscillating. So that's a sound waves or transverse waves. The other thing about sound waves is that they're mechanical waves, which means that they have to have a medium through which to be transmitted. They can't transmit in a vacuum. Electromagnetic waves are transverse waves, and a transverse wave vibrates in basically right angles to the direction of propagation. So you can kind of think of a transverse wave as this wave sort of vibrating up and down as it moves forward. And almost all electromagnetic radiation, so light, radio waves, X-rays, infrared, microwaves, all of that, those are all transverse waves. And the thing about transverse waves is they can transmit through a vacuum. They carry energy through a vacuum. So we are able to see things on the surface of our planet because that light rays have been transmitted through 93 million miles of vacuum for the sun, and we can see. One of the things that used to irk me about space movies like Star Wars is that somebody shoot in outer space and blow some up, and we'd hear the explosion. You wouldn't hear it. There'd be no sound whatsoever. You're just not going to hear it, right? At least as far as I understand it, there's nothing to transmit the sound from whatever just exploded to me, because there's nothing in there. So I would just see a flash of light and go, yep, got him. But I wouldn't hear an explosion.
Yeah, but, you know, your version of that movie would be very, very boring.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, everybody'd leave. It's like, I didn't know this was a silent movie. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point, and it is a good good perspective on, you make no sound when you scream in space, right?
Right, that's actually kind of an interesting Zen koan. You know, what is the sound of a person screaming in space? Oh, gosh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Segue into the next section with some sounds of our own.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I have a joke.
Oh, before we go into the sounds of our own, Bob's going to tell a joke.
Okay, so what's a segue?
I don't know. Is it one of those things you ride on?
Well, it's kind
of
like a hen weigh. It's about what a hen weighs.
A segue, yeah.
Actually, I think I blew that joke. My wife, she knows that joke. I should ask her, Christine, how do I supposed to tell that joke? Because I think I just screwed it up. Oh my God, I'm getting old.
No. I got it. And don't worry, we can always, we're going to punch in some laughter. Right,
okay,
there,
all right. There we go. A good big laugh track and make me feel a lot better after that effort.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. We're going to segue into the next section here with some sounds by Bob and Rob.
Yeah, yeah.
This thing of sound, we're all aware that all creatures, all animals, humans, mammals, I'm assuming even at the cellular level there's some, or insects, well, insects of course, have the ability to capture sound.
Or lots of them do.
React to sound. Yeah, not the cellular level, but certainly... Yeah. Ants, I don't know if they hear.
You know, it's interesting that the insects have a different strategy for hearing. It's analogous to the way we hear, and it's all about sensing vibration.
But yeah.
It was kind of interesting. There's a large family of night flying moths called the Noctuidae, and you'll see them at night. They're the ones, the big heavy body moths that come around lights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, they forage at night, and so they're active when bats are active, and they have a hearing organ on their abdomen, which is just this little thin piece of membrane that has a nerve endings attached to it. And there's some great footage because they use it to, I'll describe what the footage is, but they use that to perceive bats when they're hunting, because bats use sound to echolocate. So they send out a high frequency sound. If it bounces off someone and comes back, and they can determine where their prey is. And then there's other things they use to get directionality, and it has to do with their wings and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, they have this sound hunting. Well, these Noctuids, they can perceive that sound. And there's this really great footage, and it shows this Noctuid in this they used infrared light so the bats couldn't see it and the Noctuids couldn't see it. So it's essentially a dark room as far as they're concerned. And there's this Noctuid flying, and they release a bat. And you can see that as this bat starts to send out its sound waves and it's bouncing off stuff, and then it perceives this big moth, and it starts to hone in on it as it's sending out these chirps, and the moth is going, oh, uh-oh, I just heard a chirp, baby.
Yeah.
And so they start taking very elaborate
evasive action,
changing direction stuff. And the bat, you can see the bat falling when the man are flying around and it's getting closer and closer. And then it finally comes to a point where the bat is right on top of the moth. It's just ready to catch him. So the moth then is by virtue of its wings and intensity is perceived that this bat's right there. It just folds up its wings and drops like a rock. It's like, okay, I'm out of here, man. This is it. Down it goes. And so they're very sensitive to sound and they perceive it. And they perceive these bat sounds, which is interesting because you and I can listen to withstand in a cloud of bats that are foraging and we don't hear a thing.
Yeah.
You know, but the bats hear it, the moths hear it because that's really important for them to hear. So
that's fascinating. So kind of like these moths have kind of a hedgehog quality. It's like the last resort. I'm
done. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah. So whatever's down there on the ground might get me, but flying bat, it's not going to be you.
It could be hard for you, mother. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really fascinating.
Well, when we think of nature and we think of sound, the bird sounds come to mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, we could walk outside right now and mm-hmm. we would most likely hear birds singing or mm-hmm. our mm-hmm. Perception that they're singing. Mm-hmm. And you would think, oh, what a beautiful morning. And you'd be, you know, singing along.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. But so, you know, what are the birds really doing when they're...
It's interesting. And I'm not an ornithology expert. And there, you know, I may make some mistakes here. But my understanding is that there are a lot of different calls for birds and they convey information. And some of the calls that birds use are sort of aggregation things. Like when you hear a flock of a given species of birds in the woods, in the bushes, and you hear this pst, 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 just these little chirps. From what I understand, that's just saying, hey, we're here, stay together, I'm over here, oh, I'm over here, blah, 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 okay, all right, yeah, we're all together, yeah. And it's just a way to kind of communicate position. But when you hear a bird sing, when they give that really elaborate call, which are beautiful, you know, meadowlark is just a gorgeous thing, and you hear this wonderful call out of these birds, that really is in general, that's males. Almost all females don't usually sing very much. They'll chirp and stuff, but that actual call, those are males. And the males are saying, hey, baby, I got a mating territory here. I am for you. You know, this is my spot. So it's like, I'm a male, I'm here. And to attract and pull a female into their, area that they can mate. And so it's a very much of a mating kind of a thing. And each bird has a very specific call and it elicits a response. But the other thing is that some birds apparently, and again, I'm not an expert in ornithology, but some birds are able to communicate a lot of information with vocalizations. So my understanding is that crows, for example, if there were a bunch of crows in my house, and I walked outside with a shotgun and shot one of them in front of the rest of the crows and then walked back in my house, they would then communicate to other crows, that house, that guy that lives in that house, stay away from him. If he comes out the house, leave, because he's a killer. They would actually be able to mark me and communicate that information to other crows that didn't know anything about me.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to think about the level of sophistication.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't doubt that. I mean, I've seen that in our own backyard, and I we were talking earlier, and I like to sense, and this is anthropomorphic in a way, but maybe there's some science connected to it, that some houses in our neighborhood seems pretty safe are generally thought by these creatures to be safe sanctuaries. Mm-hmm. Like the squirrels seem to know that, hey, our terrier is not going to be a threat to them. Cats and birds, especially, it's like, go ahead, birds, eat our cherries. We have
hope
no
you like them.
We have no capacity to fight you, so eat at them. Our garden, it's all yours. Occasionally I'll be getting on my bike and I'll be opening up the garage and I'll hear the birds singing, but I'll hear this one, I think it's a dove or maybe a pigeon, mm-hmm. you know, but he or she, and I'm assuming it's a he, and it's some sort of
I think so,
mating
yeah.
call,
yeah.
but he'll emit this interesting kind of a call, and I can't replicate it, but it's something like, ooh, you know, it's
that's very good,
oh,
Rob.
Thank you.
Not bad. Yeah.
Well, when you have a name like Birdwell, you better be able to make a bird call. That's it must come from some ancient thing I have in my genes. But anyway, he's emitting this thing, and as I'm kind of hesitating to go where I'm going, I'm listening to him, and I'm like, what if I just called back? And so I've done this, and I've marked his rhythms, and I've thrown him off. And so I imagine that the bird is like, what was that? And then he'll resume, and in my mind, the bird is saying, I'm here, let's talk.
Yeah, say, and, what's up?
I'm open-minded here. Yeah.
How's your day?
nothing's really happening up here on this.
I ain't seen no hot-looking doves, you'll do.
I don't know what I'm in for here, but...
Yeah, that's right. Nothing ventured, nothing
let's
gained.
Just have a conversation. Anyway, it's just kind of an interesting thing. How I and other bird watchers, callers may know, is it possible to throw a bird? Are they actually hearing, or was it just a distortion that has no meaning for them? Because these are subjective things. You know, we're taking a bird call that has no connect. It might as well be a light wave, right? It has no connection other than I just interrupted the pattern or something.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I think that you know, I think this actually kind of leads us to this idea about sound inducing responses in people or in animals or in organisms, that sounds will have an effect on something. And you know, it's funny, there's a spider around here. It's very common. It's a European garden spider, and they're kind of a big brown spider, and they spin this flat orb, kind of a round web, like the orb web, the classic spider web that you see, and they usually will hang right in the middle of that web. Well, if you walk up to them and you hit them with an E, and that's that's an E somewhere, pretty close to E, I think. E. Yeah. E. Yeah.
You got
if
it.
if you hit them with that note, and only that note, they will
do a song and dance.
they get into a real defensive posture, and if you keep it up, they'll just drop out of the web. They'll leave. They'll just take off. They'll just fall out of the web. And so I don't know why that's the case, but what I suspect is that there are hunting wasps that go after spiders, and their wings create a certain frequency as
they
beat, and that vibrates in the web, and the spider says, man, that's one of them wasps, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting idea, but that idea of music eliciting responses is or sounds eliciting responses, and then you think about human beings, and I don't think I can think of any other species where people go sit in a room with other people, and some of the people are plucking on gut strings or pounding on skins or pounding on metal or blowing into tubes of metal to create these sounds. And then other people are transported into some kind of an emotional state by virtue of these sound waves being produced on these various contraptions.
Yeah, that's what we do, right? I mean, we perform, and we hope that we elicit a response.
Yeah.
But there is something kind of therapeutic about just making sound, because I know I can say personally, if a day goes by that I haven't connected with the vibration of sound, haven't explored either familiar or unfamiliar territory, I don't feel like I'm in tune with myself, if that makes any sense.
It does. Yeah,
so, I mean, we're driven to perform and to play for other people, but I think a lot of musicians, it starts with that feeling of self, of just connecting in with, you know, that B flat.
Right.
I gotta feel it. I know it's there. It's like water. I need that to go through my cells. That vibration is going to give me some sustenance to help repair cells, to help rejuvenate things. I've talked to a lot of people who sound making music. They feel younger they feel.
I testimony to that just for me personally. You know, I mean, I'm 66. I started playing a few years ago.
I thought you were 29.
Hey, there you go. Thank you very much. That makes me feel so good. But, you know, it really, really, I feel energized after I play.
Yeah.
And I can be playing with somebody or not, but it's the playing part of it. You're just kind of like, wow, that was a nice session. That felt good.
Yeah, you put out sound and it comes back to you, and I think both connect us into that feeling of vibration. That's maybe in many ways maybe that's all it is. It's not about commerce. It's about just connecting into the vibration, because that whole other part of it can be a distortion of what we're really aiming for. So, you know, we'd kind of hinted about the sounds of, and this is a whole new territory, so, but, you know, in our Western music, we going back to the science of sound, back to A440 or and those vibrations and their relationship, when we talk about Western music and Eastern music, there are some common threads, but then in many modes of Eastern music, you'll have these quarter tones, which I don't have on my piano.
Right, we can't. I mean, it's hard to generate a quarter tone on a piano or something.
I'd need some sort of bar, a whammy bar or something to move the pitch a little. So we can do it, but we have to. We don't get it as a default parameter. But where do you think that? How is it that we all live on the same planet, Bob? Yet we have these different yet similar modes of musical expression.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a great question. And it's one that I don't even know if I can answer it, but a couple of things I think is fascinate me. And that's that when you think of the physics of sound, and in our first segment, we talked about frequencies. And that frequency determines pitch. So, you know, high frequency, low frequency, and it's basically that's what determines pitch. Well, the other thing that's kind of interesting is when, you know, if you play a chord, there are, now we've got, instead of just one sound wave with a given frequency at a given pitch, we've got five or six of them, or two of them, or three of them. If we create ratios based on those frequencies. So let's say we've got a 440 and a 220, right? Okay, well, that's going to create a 2-to-1 ratio. Okay, so a 440 220 would be a 2-to-1 ratio. Yeah, and if you listen to that, that's very consonant. You know, we listen to that and we go, that's really nice. That's great. That's a nice sound. It's a very consonant sound. If the ratios of wavelengths or frequencies, excuse me, if the frequency ratios are whole numbers like 5-to-4, 3-to-2, something like that of two sounds, they will be very consonant. They'll sound wonderful. If they're not, if they're like some crazy ratio like 35.6 to 85.3, then it's going to be really dissonant and we're going to hear dissonance. So that physics is set in stone. And for us in Western music, we tend to prefer consonance to dissonance. You know, dissonance always makes us a little edgy. Consonance, it's really nice. Quarter tones differences are pretty dissonant for us, but other people listen to them and go, man, that's nice. That's a great sound.
Yeah.
So there's the physics part of it that kind of, you know, lays out these ratios and how these sound waves superimpose on each other. But then the way we interpret them is I think in some ways very cultural, and based on our experience, which is really interesting to me. You know, you've got this physical process and the physical properties, but then they get inside our head and we go, hey, that's beautiful. Oh, ouch, that kind of hurts.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, well, it's this this wonderful kitchen that we live in with all these wonderful spices and flavors.
Absolutely.
And sonic little things that we can cook with and make sound with. So thank goodness we have such a variety.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
We'll never completely get to it all, but we can enjoy what we can. We've explored sound.
Yes, we have.
To the best of our abilities at this hour.
Yep.
And, you know, in a certain regard, for me, I mean, I still expose this ignorance of the physical world. But at the same time, I have this, you know, continued appreciation for the tools that we use to help. I mean, this microphone, this ribbon microphone that we're talking into right now, that it's capturing the waves of the air pressure, and that, boy, somebody's figured out a lot of great stuff over many people have contributed to the technology and all this great stuff we take for granted.
Yeah.
But it's out there, and it's good to talk about it. And it was this was a good session to kind of bring it home, and tie it into the natural world, and to some extent, you know, how this applies to art, music especially.
It's so interesting to me is that, you know, we're surrounded by waveforms. We're just absolutely, we live in an ocean of waves. There are light waves, x-ray, on and on. We just live in this ocean of waves, just loaded with information and loaded with effects. And it just fascinates me that you know, one chunk of that spectrum of waves produces emotion in people. And we hear it, and we react to it, and it gives us pleasure. It gives us pain. It elevates us. It depresses us. It does all these things through the medium of music, and it's all of these waves that are impinging on our ears, going to our brains, and now we react in a certain way. I find that really interesting.
Well, and of course, we're talking about the mostly the positive aspects of this, and we didn't even begin to touch on some of the nefarious misuses of sounds in battle and war and
all kinds
of things that are nasty and horrible, or brainwashing through sound. I guess it's another way to illustrate the power of sound.
Yes,
we didn't talk about using sound to control behavior. Yeah. The jingles on commercials that we hear. That
I can still hum. I mean, stuff I heard when I was a kid.
Oh yeah,
it was a long time ago. I can still, you know. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah, there's thousands of the ice. They're all rattling around.
They're rattling around. You're getting hungry and you don't know why, but you're singing that song and you're heading to that store.
That's right, man. I gotta have one of those bonbons, baby. Yeah.
It's just so sweet and innocent. How could it be harmful? The song is so wonderful.
it is enormous power, you know. And I think one of the things that we were talking about, you know, today, and is this idea that all the different uses of sound, you know, so information, mating information, you know, species aggregation, That's a bad person. All the way to, you know, the beauties of Gregorian chant, or to a language, all of it. I mean, all of it, basically. And we're talking right now. There are sound waves going back in between you and I.
Yeah.
I set one up, and wham, 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 goes in your ears, wham, wham, and you go, back. It just really, really, really sounds a big deal.
Sounds a big deal. Yeah, there was, to wrap it up here, but there was an article recently about elephants being able to discern who you are, what language mm-hmm. you, but definitely knowing gender, just knowing these things about you all because of your voice.
Yeah.
And of course we know that creatures like elephants are highly intelligent, but they're just learning more and more things about these creatures that they didn't quite understand before, but now they're realizing this is definitive now. These animals, what you say to them matters. They know something about you just by hearing your voice.
Yeah, it really is interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure our household pets, our animals do too, whether or not they care.
That's like, right.
The dog might be, yeah, I know you're tired, but
I'm just waiting for the food.
Yeah. And my walk.
And my walk.
And by the way, my water dish needs cleaning.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, hey, thank you for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure to be here with you. We're glad you're out there listening to us, and we appreciate your attention and feedback.
Yep.
It's important to us. So we look forward to more to come.
More to come.
But until then,
I'm Bob Madar.
And I'm Rob Birdwell.
And this here
is the Petri Dish.